Welcome back to the Better Than Best Academy, where we have inspiring conversations with extraordinary people. We want to give you the tools and the lessons that you need to fulfill your purpose while making a positive impact on the world. Now let's dive into today's episode. Today's guest is nothing short of extraordinary. He's a rapper, a martial artist, and even a massage therapist. His name is Michael, a Dr. Cool. Now, Michael, we literally have just met, and I think that's really neat that we just press record and dive right in. But since my audience and myself don't really know too much about you, I would love for you to kind of open our conversation today with who is Michael, who is Dr. Cool?
Yeah, man. Well, firstly, thanks for having me, man. I really appreciate it. And let's see, I would try to be like short with it, but I'm, as you said, I'm an MC, I'm a rapper. I guess my passion is sharing art and sharing moments of connection and healing and trying to improve myself and trying to help other people improve themselves. And one of the through lines is to kind of be really genuine, to be honest with others, but even more so with ourselves, intellectually honest as well, you know, to not contradict ourselves and try to get to the essence of things. And I think that's part of it, but it's, I also don't mean it in a way where you'd be, and I part of two of what I'm, what's unique about what I'm bringing to the table is like a sensitivity, a lovingness, a forgiveness while still trying to be honest and strike the truth. I think that's the balance that I'm aiming for.
I love that.
How's that for it?
I love that. That's a great place to start. And you're very similar to how I feel about a lot of my approach. I like to say it. I think people deserve to hear the kind truth. And it's this idea of like love, truth in a loving way. And I definitely agree with you on that. So, I mean, exactly. With all the things you're into, I'm curious to hear a little bit. Let's, for the sake of time and for the sake of my audience being creative, I'd love to hear a little bit of like, what got you into rapping? What got you into being an MC? And kind of, yeah, like the what and the why behind it.
Sure. Well, they call them musicians. My father is a classical guitarist and my brother is a classical violinist. So when I was little, my parents, they didn't like plan that I had to be a musician growing up, but they, for them, it was normal that I would pick an instrument. So when we were little, we went to a music shop and there were all the instruments and kind of told, well, see what you like, you know? And so I grew up playing classical piano and I was very much formatted. My music, my view of music, my understanding of culture was through a lens that had been given to me by my parents, which they meant well, but I realized now it was kind of elitist and Eurocentric in the sense that it had these kind of European standards of elitism. So it's like, if music isn't harmonically complex, changing key often and stuff like that, then it's not really interesting. So pop music is kind of not interesting, but it was still like a kind of exception for the Beatles of Pink Floyd or Jimi Hendrix, which I'm really grateful also that that was part of my upbringing. But yeah, there was a kind of like all the kind of raw European music, African-American music, reggae, you know, funk, and even more so hip hop and modern music that had just a loop and a drum beat, you know, it was like, well, that's not music. That's just, you know, noise almost, you know, if you're not used to listening to rap, you don't really understand what rappers are saying. And I remember seeing live some rappers once and they were like, you know, they were cupping the mic and you couldn't really hear what they're saying. So I just heard this repetitive loop and people shouting. And I was like, you know, what is as a little kid? So I had everything to not like rap, let's say, you know? Yeah. And because I was also kind of, I wasn't following trends when I was little. So I wasn't interested in what all the other kids were listening. There was nothing bring to it. But as a teenager, then I did find, it did creep its way into my ears. And I started to listen to it a little bit more and actually hear what people were saying when they were rapping. And it started to get into my soul. And then I tried rapping myself and I found it so fun and so liberating compared to classical music. I mean, I was playing rock and stuff. I had like a rock band. I was playing bass and singing a bit. So I was having fun with it, but rap just opened up a whole other chamber. And then rap brought me into hip hop culture and a lot of understanding about the world and about, you know, the way the US and the rest of the world, but particularly the US, presents itself versus what its true history really is. And hearing African-American voices speaking directly through rap and references about, you know, Malcolm X and things like that really opened my mind like crazy. And so I owe a huge debt to hip hop culture for my evolution. So that's kind of how I got into it.
I love that. And that's such an interesting like turn. Because you mentioned you grew up in a family that was very focused on like the complexity and the elitism that is classical music and music that is on a higher caliber. And it's so interesting to me that even though rap shouldn't have been and hip hop shouldn't have been a route that you chose to take it. And it kind of almost drew you in because it was so different from what you know. I'm curious, how was it growing up in such a musical creative home that had such a level of almost excellence and elitism in that space of music? What was it like when you let your family know, oh, hey, I'm an MC, I'm a rapper, I'm a hip hop artist?
It was tough. It was tough. Because they didn't get it. You know, they were like, well, I'm really lucky. My parents are very supportive. You know, they mean well. What is this stuff, you know? And they told me, they're like, oh, well, I don't understand what you're saying, even when you're rapping. It's too fast. It's too, you know. So yeah, I felt, but I always had a kind of rebellious streak. And it's funny, you know, because people sometimes say like, oh, well, you're from a family of musicians. But some people are either like, oh, did you have to rebel to be a musician? And I was like, no, I'm from a family of musicians. Others are like, oh, you're so lucky. But it's funny because from a family of musicians, but I rebelled within that. So yeah. I stayed a musician, but I went a different path than that. So it's been really interesting, but they're really open-minded people, my family. So they're trying, and I've collaborated a bit with my dad and with my brother. My last album, Stranger at Home, we sampled my dad with his approval. So there's like classical guitar being sampled. Yeah. And my brother plays violin on some of it. And with my group also, I have a group called Captains of the Imagination. And in most projects, you hear a bit of violin and it's my brother. So we're trying to make the beat.
Love it. I love it. I missed a little bit at the end. But dude, that's so cool. And one thing I was going to follow up by, and you kind of started mentioning it there, is you said you were a classical pianist, right? That's where you started?
Yeah.
What is it about like classical and being trained in that? What is something in those areas that you've pulled into your now hip hop career?
You know, I more often look at the sides I don't like about what I learned from classical. So I'll start with that. But I think your question is really interesting. And I'm only starting to really understand what I did bring from it. But firstly, the big difference is like hip hop really values improvisation, like jazz music does too, but even more so, I would say, because there's at least when I was coming up, there were no schools. Now I teach rap, and there are more and more people teaching raps.
For sure,
I think kind of so, you know, the early 2000s, there was no like set school of how to rap. You know, so you have older heads like showing you the way and giving you tips, but there was no rigid structure. So it was all about just feeling it and going, you know. And then classical music is like, no, we're going to format you this way. And then you need to add the feeling once, you know, somehow, but the feeling comes second. Whereas in rap, the feeling I feel comes first, you know. And I think in African American traditional music in general, and maybe in the African diaspora music, and maybe in all non European. And even European traditional music, basically, before this kind of elitist thing came in, this with the system, which we have in conservatories and stuff like that around the world. So anyways, but what did I get? I mean, I was confronted with discipline, I would say, even though I've gone the wrong method to say, because I rebelled against it. I kind of ran away from that discipline. But I do think that it made me understand at least the mindset. So for example, like classical musicians, when they have a concert, like they'll wear a suit. And, you know, there's like quiet and they go in a room, you know, whereas in rap, most people, especially at the beginning, they're like, partying and smoking and drinking, and suddenly they're on stage and they, you know, and it's great too, but there is taking it seriously, basically, like taking your craft really seriously and recognizing that you can perfect your craft. I think that's something that I already had in me, let's say, from classical music, from my family, and respecting like masters. You know, my father went to Uruguay. That's where he met my mom, to study with a classical master called Carnivaro, guitar master, you know. And so hip hop has that too, once again, where you might have someone, you might seek out someone as a mentor a bit, you know. Yes, classical music prepared me for that in a certain way. And then, of course, my ear was more developed, let's say, than some, you know, in terms of those things we were talking about, key changes and harmonies and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's super cool. I always love hearing.
Is it?
What's that?
So I was going to ask, is it cutting when I'm talking sometimes? Or
it cut a little bit, but it's good now. It was like one little spot.
Okay. Cool.
Yeah, it's so cool. I love asking these origin stories to the guests that I have on, because it's so interesting how kind of our journey through life kind of paves our art, and even all the other aspects. Like you mentioned, you do martial arts. So I'm curious there, like how did you get into martial arts?
Yeah, man. Well, you'll see it's linked to everything we've been talking about, but I was always curious about martial arts ever since I was little, like seeing knights and pirates and stuff when like there would be fight scenes in movies when I was a kid and stuff. So I think that's where the seed was planted. And then I would try different martial arts. I also did fencing for a bit. It's getting pretty dark. Yeah. Is that better?
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. Yeah. So sorry, I was saying, so I liked fencing and I tried fencing for a bit and I tried other martial arts, but usually what I found was they were either too aggressive, so it kind of scared me, or they were too traditionalist, like the conservatory, like classical music, you know, like learn all these moves and stuff like that. And I was kind of still passionate about trying, and I would train with friends, like cross train things and play around, and we would invent like kind of martial arts games and stuff. But I was starting to think maybe I wasn't cut out to be a martial artist, you know, because I lacked the discipline or whatever it may be. And then when I found Sistema, I was like, wow, this exists. And what I mean is by this, I mean a martial art that is based entirely on improvisation and on self-discipline in the true sense. That's what I found out, is that they would say, we teach you self-discipline, but actually it's like in the army, they teach you discipline, not self-discipline. And then you have to learn to turn that into self-discipline. But but you don't have to follow someone else's rules to have self-discipline. And Sistema teaches you self-discipline by teaching you to listen to yourself, to feel what you're feeling, and then to decide how to act accordingly, right? So the intensity, for example, also, the reason that it was less scary for me at first is that it was always clear that it was consent-based. So it was like, okay, we'll raise the intensity level when you feel ready to raise the intensity level. And as long as you're not halting your breath, there's no hurry to get to a higher intensity. So both in terms of the fear level of the intensity and in terms of the repetitiveness of and the kind of fixed and the hierarchical way of other martial arts, Sistema was radically different to both of those because it was free, improvise, and auto-regulate your own difficulty level. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's so fascinating. This idea of self-discipline and improvisation. It's what I see the common theme as you talk, is like you're really into the improv and you're really into the self-discipline of both. Kind of what you grew up in, plus what drew you out of what you grew up in, was that improv that you get from hip-hop and freestyling. That's so interesting to me. Man, I'm so curious as to, man, I just really think it's interesting, your story and how this new form of martial arts, because I hadn't actually never heard of that martial arts you're speaking of until now. I know there's a bunch of different forms and practices out there, But that's so interesting how it's the self-discipline and the way you improv. What is it, do you think, that being a creative-minded person, that some people struggle with that self-discipline?
Good question, too. A lot of creative people, firstly, I want to say, maybe have ADHD, yeah. autism, are like neurodivergent in some way. In my case, I think ADHD was, I was not diagnosed, so I don't think it was as bad as others, but pretty sure it's something that I deal with. And so, but the artist temperament is kind of similar to the ADHD either way, which is to have like all these different ideas all the time and think through your head and then some typing. So it does make it very difficult to get quote unquote organized, you know, because you're following your passions and your inspiration. And then the other thing is that our society, our modern society, is not made for that mindset. Basically, it's made for, again, like that traditional mindset is much more what it's geared towards. So that was your question, right? Like, what is it that makes it harder for artists?
I think that was a great answer. And I agree. I think it's that level of, like you said, an ADHD or a autism or something. And honestly, I feel like that's even a superpower, though, because it's like you said, but modern society makes you feel like you need to conform and to fit into this box,
right,
and do it the exact same way each time. But I feel like the way to find that self-discipline is kind of like the way that you found interest in hip-hop, kind of the way that you found interest in this form of martial artist. It's that improv piece. It's the, like, it's the idea of, like, if someone presents an idea, a lot of times people say, yes, but, and then they say why it can't work. And it's that idea of what if
right.
we get the thinking, yes, and. It's when we open mm-hmm. up the possibility of the and, that you begin to dive down it deep. But yeah, without a loose structure, of course, we're going to be like, next thing, next thing, next thing. But at
right.
the same time, there's a way to kind of look at it from a broader view. And when you do have that moment of self-discipline, it's like, what can I do with this piece and really expand on that? So I'm curious, again, I only know a little bit about you and kind of what you're about. And I want to circle back. You mentioned earlier that you're teaching hip hop now. Is that right?
Yes, I teach rap workshops, kind of like in the context of like a social work. Currently, well, I teach also in schools sometimes to kids, but yeah, regularly I'm teaching in two different kind of neighborhoods where it's funded by the government, like the social work here in Switzerland. And it's open to youths from 16 to 25 years old. And they come in and there's one of the sessions is a place with a studio. So they come in, we all pick a beat, we all write together, and then we record with whoever's there. And then the other one is not in a studio. So that one is similar. We'll pick a beat or something, or we'll pick a topic, or we'll pick a kind of a rap exercise. But the point, what's interesting about it being social work is that the goal is not to turn everyone into a professional rapper. The goal is to create community and to give you young people a space to be and to share feelings and whatever, and just not be out on the streets, right? So, but I kind of make it as if it's about rapping so that, you know, so they don't come here thinking like, help us with our emotions. No, they're like, okay, we're coming because we like rapping. I mean, it depends. Some of them come because they like the group, you know, and they've become friends and stuff, which is really cool. You know, there's like, you have a real mix of people, some who are really socially able and some who were like bullied and stuff like that, but they found this kind of safe place through rap. I love doing this work, actually.
That's so cool. I can tell. Even as
I don't remember if there was a question attached.
No, I was just asking just for you to explain that a little more. We don't necessarily have that in the States. I mean, we might have something now. Me being out of school for a while now, I don't see those programs as much. So I think that's awesome that y'all are doing that over there in Switzerland. And I think that us in the States definitely should take notes, because me growing up being so influenced like with hip hop, as I feel like from your story as well, it's that would have been such a more positive outlook and outlet for me to have when I was that age. I think that's so great that's the work you're doing. And I think it's cool how you make it about rap, but at the end of the day, yeah. they're learning how to handle their emotions, how to work through exactly. difficulties. Man, that is so interesting and such a fresh perspective. And I think that's a misconception that a lot of people get from the hip hop culture, especially those
for sure
who aren't in it, is they think it's just drugs, sex, and gangs and violence. And it's so much more than that. Like it's an avenue to express yourself. And more than that, it's an outlet that can be, when used for good, can really make a difference. And I think that's so interesting. So I'm curious, I haven't got to listen to much of your music, but I'm just curious. So your mindset over this and being positive and, you know, helping people grow in these areas, how does that translate into your music that you're making now?
Well, people used to accuse me of being like preachy sometimes in my raps, you know, in the beginning I was very influenced by like Immortal Technique and KRS-One and some versions of Tupac, where I would be, you know, kind of like, this is what's wrong with the world. And, you know, this is what you got to do. But nowadays it's not that I don't do that at all anymore, but it's more about being raw and honest with my own feelings and kind of leading by example, I guess, or hoping that other people can resonate with that. Because that's also what I realized is really powerful with rap that touches me, you know, is like, I just respect that, you know, and that's something I have to say, like Kendrick Lamar, for example, you see his evolution and you see the latest album. I don't know if you listen to it, Mr. Morale and the Big Steppers, but like, that's what I feel like he's done. You know, he really is just like, okay, well, you know, when they say, oh, once a rapper is rich and famous, what has he got left to talk about? Oh, every human has stuff to talk about. So. If you're like Kendrick, you become better at peeling back the layers of yourself and exploring that. And that's infinite, you know? So, and I think that's the kind of legacy that I aspire towards, you know, to that raw honesty and then creativity as well. Of course, you know, you're having fun with it. You're trying things, you're following sounds and aesthetics, but there's, because it's rap and you have words, you in my case, there's also, yeah, like a message, I guess, or a through line of being authentic.
And, yeah, for sure. That's so interesting. And I agree. I think it's important as we continue to grow as people. I think that we always have something to share and we always have something to discover about the world or even about ourselves. And I think that's going to be reflective in our art that we make. So since you, to go back to the fact that you have taught hip hop and rap to a degree, I'm curious, what would be that one piece of advice you would share to somebody, whether it's even a younger you, even someone that may be listening or watching to this podcast, what's that piece of advice you would give them if they have this desire to make any kind of art? It doesn't necessarily have to be rap specifically, but it can be. What would you say to someone like that?
Well, one advice, I would say, yeah, to be really real with yourself first and foremost. I mean, it goes back to the advice I would give everyone in a way, but it's like, be clear about what you want to do and why, and then do it. Sounds easy, but like, you know, like, because we get worried about like what people are going to like, what people are going to think, like, what's trending, you know, the views you have on YouTube or whatever, you know, or streams on, or our origin, like where we're from and whether people are going to take us seriously, or, you know, so many different things that are secondary almost to the art, you know? So one, it's easy to say, be genuine to the art, but that's why I'm saying it's almost too open. I would say it's more about, yeah, like, observe yourself and what you want and find out what you want to do and keep trying to do it and refine that and just keep doing that, you know, and the rest I think will come to a certain extent.
For sure. That's so good. And I agree. I'm just curious. I want to ask a little bit about you and what do you want to create in the next 3 years?
Well, I'm still microlearning for myself, for one thing, where I can be really comfortable creating and having a financial stability with that. And so I think within 3 years, I'm hoping to be further ahead than I am now, and at least at a baseline of stability that I feel like I haven't quite reached yet. But beyond that, I want to, it's linked though, I want to create like a kind of a label or a company, not just for me, but for the artists around me, and particularly the English King hip hop scene of Geneva, which I'm a part of. And so I want to establish that in a way where we can all benefit from that stability, and where it's taken seriously, and where the scene that already exists becomes known to a certain extent, you know. Now, whether that's possible in 3 years, we'll see, but that's what I'm aiming for. I'd say even the next year is a goal, but I think it'll take more than 1 year, but 3 is possible.
For sure. What are the dangers you think that are standing in your way from making that possible?
Oof. I think I'm the biggest danger in my own way. And the thing is that there are traps, you know, there are times where you think that there's an outside obstacle, but it's actually you. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the biggest thing. Like, so many times I look back and I'm like, oh, I really thought that, like with the examples I was giving you before, you know, it's the style of music that I'm doing that's not what's trending, or, you know, different things like that, or it's because I rap in English and in Geneva people speak French. But I don't know what it is, but I feel like I'm going to find other things that I'm doing. There's other outside things like, you know, like COVID, you know, something like that happening again will obviously throw a wrench in the works, you know. And now also streaming, the whole market is, you know, constantly evolving with AI coming in and stuff like that. It could really go either way. So those are some of the obstacles. But I'll tell you what it is. Or the biggest flaw I have is taking on too much and trying to do too many projects and not being clear. But I am getting more and more focused, and that's great. But yeah, that's the biggest one, I think, is will I be able to, without, because if I limit myself too much, I'll be frustrated. So I know I'm not going to do that. I still have to have like several projects going on at the same time. But if I get spread too thin, I will repeat patterns that I've had in the past that's held me back. So I'd say that's the main one.
For sure. I also like to think of the other side, Mike. What about the opportunities? Like, what are the things that could actually help you fly in the next 3 years?
The funny thing is, I've noticed that I used to have a lot of doubts about being an independent artist and stuff like that. And one of the things I noticed was, after a while, I started to notice that if I look back, I see the path I've taken, and I see that it's been going up, you know, by upwards, I mean going towards where I want it to go. But while there are a lot of times where we feel like we're in a plateau, or we're, you know, and then you're questioning, you're like, well, at what point should I give up, you know? But there was a time about a year or two ago that I started to realize that even though it's slow and steady, it's always improving, you know? And what I also noticed is that every so often you kind of unlock something, but you didn't know you were unlocking it. And then afterwards, opened a new chamber, you know, as Wu-Tang would say. Like, for example, I'm thinking a group for the first time in our career, and he kind of fell out of the sky all of a sudden. But I know that we weren't ready. Maybe we would have been, but I mean, the universe is telling me that whatever we did just recently unlocked something, you know what I mean? Or it could be arbitrary. It could be like the time it takes. So there are a whole bunch of little things that could unlock, and some of those will create a snowball effect, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you can unlock something that actually like levels you up a lot. Like, we have a whole back catalog now for quite a while. So if suddenly one song goes viral, for example, that would speed up the whole process, you know? So part of what I'm doing as well is learning as much as I can and being consistent, so that if suddenly we get a boost from something, it could be someone like suddenly donating a lot of money to us, or it could be like a song going viral or cutting with a key artist, or it could be, you know, there are so many different things that could help us. But what the key, I think, is to be ready that when that happens, you're not suddenly projected beyond your means to accept that blessing. See what I mean? Like, you know, when people get famous really young and then they become drug addicts and stuff like that because they weren't ready for the fame, you know? So I think that's also the blessing in a way of it taking a long time if you're spending that time wisely. And I'm hoping that I am. I'm really learning a lot about the business all the time. I'm learning even more importantly, I think, about myself and about the people I work with to be mature and handle people's emotions and crises because they're going to happen, you know? So yeah, but there are so many different things that, so many different blessings that can come our way. So
for sure,
I'm just trying to be open to them.
For sure. And I love that perspective of it may not happen in the time frame we'd like it, but it's in that process that we're building that foundation. Like I always think of it in the form of the saying, like a great gift and a great talent that we may have or a person may have can get you into a room. But it's the character they have or you have that'll keep you there. Because we've seen it. Like you said, we've seen the young artist that's got amazing talent. They're so gifted. And they rise to success too soon. And then, you know, whatever happens, they have a fall from grace. They have a fall from whatever, like they may get on drugs, whatever it may be. And that's such an interesting perspective. But it sounds like you have a good grasp there in that area. So I'm curious, what would you say are your strengths? Like what makes you special, Mike? What are your strengths that really could help you turn these dreams that you have into reality?
I mean, I think we all have, it's by listening to who we are and accepting who we are and loving ourselves and then working on that we unlock our potential to fit in to what life is proposing, right?
Yeah.
So for me, I mean, my ability to improvise and to adapt, I think is definitely, I can only really talk about the skills that have helped me so far. I don't know which of my personality traits are what's going to help me in the future, but so far being adaptable, being able to like land on my feet and to seize opportunities has definitely been a big part of it. And then caring about people, you know, sometimes people could see it as a flaw, maybe. Like sometimes I maybe didn't cut people out of my life quick enough. And there may be some people still around that I should not, you know, cut out of my life sounds harsh, but that I should set firm boundaries with, you know.
Yeah.
But I still think I have to believe that that's a strength, you know, because that's what I look for in others as well, is genuine, compassionate people. I'm not really interested in building with people who are just in it for the money or just in it for this or that, you know? So yeah, really genuinely caring and being adaptable, I think are maybe my two greatest strengths. And I think also being humble in the sense, accepting that there's so much that I don't know and that I need to keep learning.
For sure.
I think that's also a good thing.
You kind of already touched on it, but I'm curious to hear your perspective a little more. What do you think are the dark sides of your strength?
I mean, I could tell you dark sides of me, but the dark sides of my strengths is actually interesting. So yeah, so obviously we talked about, yeah, improvising, then lacking structure. Oh yeah, and I talked about, yeah, being nice, like, or caring, but that meaning being too nice, so.
For sure.
And what was another strength that I gave myself?
You said mention being humble, was it?
Yeah. Okay. Well, there I could also like underestimate myself maybe and pass up on opportunities. You know, I've noticed that sometimes like come across as like not hungry enough, you know, like maybe someone is kind of testing me like, oh, if he says, you know, sometimes people are like, there's a rapper called Terminology. I don't know if I should tell this story, but I think it's okay. And he met Imagine, the other rapper in my group. It's called Imagine. And they met when Imagine was doing some of his first big shows and he opened for Terminology. It was crazy. It was like Terminology, Rex, Evidence. Yeah, like a whole bunch of like all-star, like famous underground artists. And Terminology is just like the first thing he says was,
how do you rate yourself as an MC out of 5 or out of 10, you know?
And Imagine was like so taken aback, you know, like I don't even know what he answered, but he was just like, you know, and so sometimes people are kind of like testing you. They want to see that you believe in you, you know? Sure. So your humility in that way can kind of work against you in theory. But again, I personally don't like people who are super arrogant as much. So it can go both ways, you know? But I do think that, yeah, sometimes people have been like, yeah, man, don't let everyone else eat first all the time. You know what I mean? Like I do like get like pay myself last, you know, if at all, out of my crews that I'm helping. And maybe, what I notice is that sometimes it doesn't benefit anyone else either, because I have a kind of a bit of a leadership role. And if I'm not winning, then I'm not inspiring them to win. So I see myself as like, I'm putting you first, but they're looking to me. So if I'm not doing well, then they're like, well, there's suddenly the whole foundation's shaky. And that's something that's recent in my understanding. Sure. So that's four.
Dude, I've already loved this conversation. I won't take too much of your time. I notice we're getting a little darker on your side.
Yes.
And I didn't even preface
that's cool, though.
People watching and listening is you're in Switzerland right now and I'm over in Texas, and that time difference is crazy. So even that we're getting to talk right now, technology continues to blow my mind. The fact that we're...
Yeah, it's cool. Right.
And that's super cool. But I have just two more questions for you. And we'll
don't worry, man. I have to say you're asking really good questions, man. So thank you.
I appreciate it. I definitely value, and I too can be also super humble in my own rights. And I don't say that as a humble brag or anything, but I definitely understand where you're coming from there. But I do pride myself in asking the right questions and asking good questions. Mm. So it's always, it makes me feel good to know that the questions are resonating with the people that I'm interviewing. So I do appreciate your kind words.
Boy.
But at this point, before the last question, I want to flip it and ask you, do you have any questions for me / is there something in particular you'd like to talk about?
Well, man, I mean... And the thing is that, like you said, time is running a bit short, but already as soon as you started asking me questions, I could tell by the way you were asking me that you had some experiences of your own in those fields, you know? So I don't, other than you interviewing, I don't really know what your relationship to music is and stuff, but I figured out that you must be a musician yourself. So maybe already you could just tell me a tiny bit about what you do other than the podcast.
For sure. So... let's see, where do we begin? When I was in earlier school, I don't know how much you know about the States or like marching bands or anything.
Yeah, yeah.
I had the opportunity before I made it to like high school. I don't know if that translates well to overseas, but basically I had the opportunity to try out for the drum line, and I'll give you like a really condensed story. So I was really passionate about just music. I was always banging on stuff. I got into wanting to play the drums, and I tried out for a marching band in the 6th grade, which was like early intermediate level school, and I didn't make it. And I was like, this is dumb. I wanted to do this. Like, it crushed my dreams as a young kid. And I still wanted to be creative. So I turned to art, like visual art. And I was in art throughout most of high school and really got into that. But wanted to be an architect at one point, but that was just like not for me because I'm not into math, and it was more the music that I was into. In 2008, I fell in love with hip-hop music, probably a little bit before that. Yeah, it was years before that I fell in love with hip-hop music. But about 2008, I started being a rapper myself. And I was rapping. I was into, and I rapped up through 2018 when I just felt like it was time to transition to something else. Went through a whole like self-discovery thing, how my identity isn't tied into what I do, but who I am behind that. And that crafts the reason that I make the art that I make. So it was like this real interesting like self-discovery, got really into personal development. Also around that time, I'm a Christian in faith, and we have like a worship bands at our church. So we have like worship every time we have church, and we have full bands and we have drums. And I actually have gotten the opportunity to now play with my worship band. So I play drums for my worship team most Sundays. Cool. and Wednesdays. And nice. I'm getting to do that and fulfill that side of my musicality. And I'm still writing music when I can. But yeah, so there is definitely a level of music and experience in that. So yeah, that definitely was why I like to ask these questions, because I was a creative first before I was into podcasting. And here now I actually coach creatives over mindset and kind of discovering themselves and kind of, and you notice with my questions, it's a lot of like helping people, not telling them what to think, but showing them how to think. It's kind of like that idea of I'm not going to give someone a fish. I'm going to teach them how to fish. And that's a lot of the work that I've been doing now. And I mean, I've just been loving it, because it's, I can tell, like when you were mentioning, when you're helping those young kids learn hip hop and help them discover themselves through music. Yeah, I see how you come alive. And it's very similar for me when I'm having a conversation on a podcast, or I'm getting to coach a client one-on-one or in a group setting. It's just that opportunity to really impact lives. So that's a very condensed version of kind of.
Yeah, but
yeah.
That's cool, man. That makes sense. That makes sense. I see in the conversation we've had, all the things you just described make sense. Yeah, I don't know how to explain it more than that, but yeah, that's cool, man. Drums is the foundation of all the styles of music that we were talking about, the African music, you know, being in this kind of elitist, let's say, I want to call it colonial mentality, because, and I mean that even Europeans colonizing themselves, you know, they like erased the folk traditions and erased the, and the folk tradition is all about rhythm, you know, clap your hands together, you know, dance in rhythm. But then classical music is all about this like intellectual, and it's still beautiful and emotional too, but it's, you'll notice that the rhythm becomes like very fluid, you know, it's like less, there's not that groove. The groove is what's missing. So as a drummer, I think that's in you, you know, that means that you have that groove, that love for the rhythm, you know, is important too.
The rhythm and the rhyme and the words, being a former hip hop artist myself.
Yeah.
I was talking to, I had another interview recording earlier, and I kept saying things in rhyme unintentionally, because it just comes out, and it's just like, you can take the rapper out of the person, but you can take the person out of the rapper, but you can't take the rapper out of the person, or however you would say it.
Yeah.
I love just that, the art of lyricism and like wordplay, double entendres. Like I could nerd out about that stuff on top of all the rhythm stuff, like the multi-polyrhythm.
Exactly.
It's just a few of the many things that come alive and that I come alive thinking about. But I won't take too much more of your time. And again, we're kind of losing daylight on your end, but it has been such a great conversation so far. And again, I just want to thank you again for taking the time to be a part of my show and just sharing yourself and sharing your art. And I will definitely have all your links and stuff in the description. So everyone listening and watching, definitely go check out Dr. Cool's content. And with that said, final question for you. And I love to end on this question, and you might have skimmed through and you might know what's coming. But I want you to picture you're at the end of your life, however long you plan to live on this planet, and you're surrounded by all the people you love. What do you want to be remembered for?
Peace. I mean, just love, man. Just someone who was not afraid to love. Not even about being afraid to love, but someone who put love first, you know, that's what I want. And that's what I need to remember all the time, you know, like the rest doesn't matter. Like it really doesn't matter compared to that, you know? And when I think about deathbeds, I think about family, you know, and so many families, like they don't even say, I love you, you know, and it's such a weight on them, you know, such a huge regret that so many people have. And I'm glad that I'm already, you know, with my family, for example, we say I love you a lot and stuff, and it's one thing to say it, but I really want to be that, you know, I want to live that. And yeah, I would like that to be my legacy, and all the rest is just a bonus, you know. If they like my rap and they're glad that they have it, you know, if they read some of my words, sure. But I hope that also in that respect, I hope that love will echo through, you know, and that even the times when I was angry at society and angry at injustice, that the love that comes from is what shines through.
For sure. So good.
And that's where I think the Christian values, you know, I don't agree with all religious people automatically, because I think everybody has different reasons of being what they are, and different people have different relationship with it. But at least what I understand as the fundamental value of Christianity is love. And so I have nothing but it's for inspiration to me too.
Yeah. So good, man. That was such a great answer. And actually, I do have one more question. And I don't always ask this, but I like to ask it sometimes because I feel like it's important to reflect on the conversations we have, because it helps us kind of instill the impact that should be made, if that makes sense. So I'm curious to ask, what was the big takeaways or insights you got from our conversation today?
I mean, I'm going to have to digest before I can give you a good answer on that, you know, and because I feel like it's a strong thing. But I'll tell you, I mean, like you said, you really did get me to reflect. So, you know, sometimes I do an interview and people, I just feel like I'm telling them things. And then afterwards, I'll be like, oh, did I express myself well or whatever? But right now, I don't feel like that. I feel like you're helping me realize things about myself, and you're helping me feel good about it, to be honest. Like, and you didn't only ask me to say good things too, you know, you said, what are your flaws and all that, but somehow my overall feeling that I'm leaving with is like, I feel inspired. I feel charged, you know, I feel valued. I feel connection. I really appreciate you, man. And I want to say also shout out to our mutual connect who introduced us. Because he obviously had the right idea. And I also want to be grateful to my own self, because when I looked, I was like, I think this person is trying to do something good. You know, that was my main criteria to accepting this, you know, because you never know, you know, you see things and you see snippets, you don't know what people's motivations are. But right now, from having had this dialogue, I really feel it. I feel like even more so than I thought, like you really are here trying to do this for the right reasons, you know? So yeah, that's what I take away. I take away feeling charged, feeling inspired, and feeling grateful.
Come on. I love it, Mike. Dr. Mike, man, I'm so glad
no problem.
You got to connect. And yeah, this has been one of my favorites. And no, I don't say that about every person I have on my... I definitely have enjoyed our conversations, and I enjoy future conversations we may have on and off. Mike, thank you so much for watching and listening today. Let's stay connected. You can either click on the video or click that little subscribe button so we can stay connected. And also be sure to follow me on Instagram and TikTok at coach.redwallet to get more consistent encouragement and motivation to live your better than best life.